You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us. We appreciate that. Wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in tacos, S as in sangria, M as in margaritas. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at underscore Kennedy Miller underscore underscore Kennedy, as in the former president John F. and the former wrestler Mr. Kennedy underscore Kennedy Miller underscore.
All right. It's been a while since we've talked to you guys. We've missed you dearly. But to get into the sports, NFL free agency is up on us, and the teams are wheeling and they are dealing. Jaguars signed Marvin Jones. Hunter Henry to the Patriots.
Yes, sir.
Jonnu Smith to the Patriots. Emmanuel Sanders to the Bills. So, Kennedy Miller, what team has made the biggest moves so far in your opinion?
The answer has to go to the New England Patriots. You think about how we looked at that team last year, and we were excited about Cam Newton coming, but we were also worried about the lack of talent around him. And I think that Bill Belichick has done a great job of putting talent around that team that was kind of a little weak talent-wise, and also not to mention had some guys that had sat out last year due to COVID. But I think that the Patriots have done a tremendous job adding two tight ends. Talking with you earlier, I think it's going to be like the old Gronk and Aaron Hernandez days with the Patriots, and giving Cam Newton some weapons that he really needs around here. And so I'm excited about the Patriots this year, and I think they really capitalized on an offseason where a lot of people you see are restructuring deals because they don't have a lot of money. And you look at how historically these past 20 years the Patriots have not spent that much money, and now that they have a lot of cap space, they're finally starting to use it to bring in some guys.
Staying with the Patriots, I think one reason they had to go big in free agency is because they've whiffed so badly drafting, right?
Yes.
Like, they've been historically poor drafting receivers. Haven't really drafted tight ends very well in the last couple of years, not named Gronkowski or Aaron Hernandez, right? Defensively, right. Had some moves that didn't quite work out. So I think this is going to be the year where we find out if Cam Newton is finished or not. Because last year, the other way to put it, he was bad. Like, 8 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, it's rough. Like, if you start going through some of the game logs, it looks like a high school box score some of these games. Some of those games, he was throwing the ball 15 and 16 times and completing half of those passes. Mm-hmm. He got benched for damn Jarrett Stidham. In some ways, it's similar to what Brady went through last year before when he went to Tampa Bay. We're like, all right, we're going to find out if he's finished. You know, because Tampa has your Mike Evans, your Chris Godwins, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate. They've got those guys. So we're going to find out. I mean, I don't think the guys the Patriots have signed are on that level, but Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry are the best two tight ends on the board. Kendrick Bourne's a pretty good wide receiver. Nelson Aguilar had a pretty good year last year with the Raiders. After his first couple of years, he struggled catching the ball. And they've still got some pretty good running backs. Damian Harris, Sonny Michel, and they're getting Dante Hightower back. So I think that should really help them. Tell me this. Do you think sometimes the expectations are higher for Cam and people don't think that the fact that he didn't really have good receivers shouldn't matter because he's always played on a team with raggedy wide receivers?
That high on Cam, especially a lot of media people. But I think when you look at his career and how he'll be remembered, I don't think he'll get enough credit because of the teams that he had success with, the lack of weapons that he had on those teams, starting with the Auburn team that he led to the national championship that you and I have talked about before. We can't name another offensive player from that team that he just, you know, went through the SEC and beat everybody with. And then you look at that Carolina Panthers team in 2015 that went to the Super Bowl. And, you know, I remember looking at that team. That was my freshman year of college. And I remember at the beginning of the year training camp, Kelvin Benjamin tears his ACL. And my thinking was, okay, well, that's it for the Panthers. And they go 14-1 and go to the Super Bowl. And so I think from then on, Cam is in an era where, like, I don't know, we haven't seen Pat Mahomes do it yet, but like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, obviously, guys who can consistently do more with less. And I feel like the injuries have also caught up to Cam. And I think that's where now, because we talked about it before, Taysom Hill and Cam Newton are 6 months apart. But as far as career-wise, they're on two totally different levels of their career because Cam has had so many injuries.
I think that's a brilliant segue to talk about this ridiculous contract that Taysom Hill was given.
See how I did that?
Hey, man, my man. 4 years, $140 million for Taysom Hill. Now, while that number might be offensive, and it is for somebody who's only started four games at quarterback, the way the Saints have this structured is that they can void it at any time. So they can cut him next year. Right? And mind you, they're still bringing back Jameis Winston. So 1 year is $14 million. So they're not completely sold on this. But my thing is this. Why make such a commitment to Taysom Hill after four starts? Like, this feels real Brock Osweiler-esque, if that makes sense. Like, when the Texans gave Brock Osweiler $75 million after seven starts that year in Denver, and then no less than a year later, the Texans had to, like, bribe the Cleveland Browns with a second-round pick to get Brock Osweiler out of there.
Yes, sir.
And then, like, my big thing with Taysom Hill has been this. If Taysom Hill is your quarterback of the future, how is he just now starting a game at 30 years old? Who in their right mind would have your quarterback of the future as your punt protector? Who puts the quarterback of the future on the kickoff team? Who does that? If this is really your guy, you're supposed to put this dude in bubble wrap. Like, despite the fact that he's living out Tim Tebow's dreams, this doesn't mean he's going to be a serviceable, let alone even competent NFL quarterback. Like, this doesn't, it doesn't make much sense to me. And I'll say this. If Sean Payton can find a way to turn Taysom Hill into an NFL quality quarterback, damn it, he's the coach of the year. I don't care how many games the Saints win. I do not care. Because if you can make it work with this dude, and I'm not saying Taysom Hill isn't physically talented, because he is. But if he ain't been a quarterback yet, why would I believe he can start now at the age of 30?
I have no clue to this whole situation. It would be one thing, you know, it would be one thing if Jameis Winston wasn't on the roster, a guy who's made a Pro Bowl, a guy who's thrown for 5,000 yards, a guy who's proven that while he might not be a top five quarterback, he's proven that he is a serviceable quarterback in this league. I don't understand the whole Taysom Hill love. And if I'm not mistaken, he started last year, didn't he?
He started those four games when Breeze was out.
And I don't recall Taysom Hill looking that great.
In fact, like that game, you remember last year when the Broncos had to go get a practice squad wide receiver who had played quarterback at Wake Forest for a period of time and he had to be quarterback that week? I watched that game just for the spectacle of it all. Like, how is this going to work with a practice squad wide receiver playing quarterback on like 3 hours of preparation? Taysom Hill did not look decidedly better than Kendall Hinton that day. If you would have told me, asked me which one of these dudes came up from the practice squad yesterday on 3 hours of work, it'd have been a coin flip.
You wouldn't know. Like I said, I just don't get it, especially with that type of money. I know, you know, you're probably about to go into the contract aspect of it, but even then, it's just, that's a white privilege contract, though.
Oh,
it just is.
Taysom Hill and Cliff Kingsbury are going in the Game Plan Podcast White Privilege Hall of Fame. Both of them.
We need to add to that. I feel like there's more people we could elaborate to on that.
Shoot. Taysom Hill, Bill Simmons, Aaron Baines. I ain't never seen somebody get banged on as much as Aaron Baines and still have a job in the NBA.
Very true.
Moving on. I was going to ask you, speaking of white privilege and, you know, dudes like that, what do you think has been the worst move in free agency so far?
I don't understand the Bears getting Andy Dalton. How do we go from being in the Russell Wilson sweepstakes to signing Andy Dalton for 1 year, $10 million? I'm not too low on Andy Dalton. I think he can win games giving a bunch of talent around him. I just don't think that's the situation for him. I think the thing that made Mitchell Trubisky somewhat of a starter and then believe that he might have a future there is because he was a little bit, you know, he could make plays. Andy can't make plays. You always talk about Dak Prescott, how, you know, all he has to do is drive the car on 10-2. That's Andy Dalton. He can't do anything outside of that without the requisite talent around him. You think about the success that those Bengals teams had. Andy Dalton had some really good teams. You know, like, you could argue quarterback was the worst position that they had. A.J. Green, Mohamed Sanu, Tyler Eifert. Offensive line was good. The defensive line was good. The linebackers were good whenever Vontaze Burfict wasn't getting suspended. The DBs were good with Pac-Man Jones. You can't ask him to make anything of this Chicago Bears roster, especially not offensively. So I think it's a terrible move.
The Chicago Bears just signed another version of Nick Foles, to be honest with you.
Yep, that's exactly what they did.
You got two of the same dude. That's almost like, remember we were kids, and they were like, all right, why would you get two of the same snack? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, yo, get chips and get a cookie. Why get? You don't need two pair of, like, you know, Cool Ranch Doritos. They got two pair of those. But it ain't even like Cool Ranch Doritos. Like, Nick Foles and Andy Dalton, they candy corn, to be honest with you. They that don't nobody want. Like, when you get the, like, when
candy corn.
You know when you at Halloween and, you know, you going trick-or-treating or whatever, and at somebody's house they got candy corn, you're like, I mean, I'll take it because I'm supposed mm-hmm. to be polite, right?
Right.
But then immediately you trying to offload this candy corn to some idiot. They got two candy corns in their quarterback room. And even worse, like you said, Andy Dalton, he is a talent that is elevated. He does not elevate the talent around him, right? In Chicago, they've got Tariq Cohen, good running back coming off an injury. Dave Montgomery, pretty good running back. They're trying to trade their good receiver, Anthony Miller. You know, he's coming up on the end of his rookie deal. He should be expensive. Other than that, at receiver, there's not much to be had. Yep. And they've got, on defensively, their win now with Khalil Mack, Roquan Smith, Robert Quinn, Danny Trevathan, Eddie Jackson, and they are subjected to that horrific offense. So,
yep.
They're going to be, any other moves that, you know, you want to discuss? Anybody else that you think, like, this move could really shake some things up?
Well, obviously, my Dallas Cowboys keeping their quarterback. I don't know if that's technically free agency or just re-signing, but I'm pleased with it, I will say. I'll let you elaborate on it a little bit, but I'm not too upset about that. I'm glad that we finally got the deal done.
Be happy you have a quarterback that wants to be there, okay?
Right.
Because it seemed the entire time he wanted to be in Dallas. And given the fact that Dak Prescott carried Jerry Jones's water on all that anthem stuff and all the police stuff, Dak Prescott donated $1 million to Black Lives Matter, $2 million to the police, right? He did all that. And thankfully, Jerry Jones finally rewarded him. He had to, you know, put Jerry's feet to the fire. But Dak got his paper. Like, he got, what was it, $66 million upon signing?
I believe so, yes.
Bro, can you imagine what his Bank of America account had to look like when they deposit $66 million into your account? Bro.
That is family-changing money.
And that ain't even half of it. Like, I'm going to ask you this question. If you got $66 million deposited into your bank account right now, what would you do?
I don't even know. I feel like I would just keep going with the life that I'm living right now, just coaching. I don't know, man. Because I don't have any, like, thing really extravagant that I really want. Just the freedom to be able to live comfortably, a freedom that I haven't felt yet, but I could imagine is like no other.
You a better man.
What would you do?
You a better man than me. You know how they always say God knows not to give people more than they can handle?
Well, would you go to that North Texas PhD office?
Boy, I would go to my office right now and clean out my shit. I'm done. I got $66 million and another $75 million coming. Please, I'm gone. Man, look, I clean out my office. Then I go to, I don't even know where you buy yachts. You go to a dealership or I don't know. I go get me a yacht. I call that the young rich.
Would you have it all the way spelled out or just in the initials?
I'd have it all the way spelled out. It's my boat. I paid for it. We ain't leasing this boat. Oh, no, this is mine. I got $66 million. I can pay for a boat.
That is hilarious.
I'd be like Oprah. Look, because my account was $66 million. Look, that mm-hmm. ain't got, look, Biden bucks and Kamala cash ain't got nothing on $66 million hitting your account, okay?
You ain't lying.
Going to be all the way stimulated, okay? But
you are not lying.
Matter of fact, my stimmy hits tomorrow morning, and it's time to buy a new pair of J's.
You're right.
But we got to leave it right there. Well, we will be right back with more of the Game Plan Podcast on the other side of the break. Coming up next, we will discuss NBA trade deadline deals, buyout candidates, all that and more on the other side of the break. This is the Game Plan Podcast. Don't go anywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tacoma, S as in Seattle, M as in Maryland. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter, _Kennedy Miller_Kennedy, as in the former NFL player Cortez Kennedy and the former North Carolina basketball star Kennedy Meeks. Okay. _Kennedy Miller_
All righty. We're going to keep things going. We're going to switch it up to basketball. The NBA trade deadline is about a week away. Rumors have been swirling about a number of high-profile players. So, Kennedy Miller, I'm going to name a player, and you're going to name where you think they can be the best fit.
Sounds good.
All right. So, to start off, Harrison Barnes. Where do you think his best fit would be in a trade or buyout scenario?
I've seen a lot of reports that link him to the Celtics. I'm not sure how much I like that, adding another wing. It's almost like you let Gordon Hayward go to bring in another wing. But that being said, Harrison Barnes has proven that he's a solid player in the NBA. Obviously, he's got some championship pedigree. I'm trying to find his overall statistics this year. He's averaging close to 17 a game, 17-6 on 49% and 37% from three. He's a quality player. I just don't think that that's really a need for Boston. I think trying to get a big like Vucevic or Drummond would better suit them more than adding another wing.
I would definitely agree with that. I think just the presence of Harrison Barnes, like, he would eat up playing time from Brown and Tatum in some ways, right? And we saw the last time when the Celtics had too many good players, they weren't a very good team. And to be fair, this year, they've kind of sputtered around a lot, right? So
right.
I think as Brown and Tatum have blossomed without Kyrie Irving being there, and I'm not saying they blossomed just because Kyrie's not there, Kyrie's a bad teammate or anything like that, but when there was a logjam with Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris, Tatum and Brown, you almost had too many good players, and Brown and Tatum right. needed to develop. Now, Brown and Tatum have developed, but that might take the ball out of their hands a bit. And do you want to give up decent young players and a pick for a guy like Harrison Barnes, who, like, how much will he make them better?
Right.
Moving on. P.J. Tucker.
I think for P.J. Tucker, he's a guy that every contender would benefit. When I say every contender, I mean the Jazz, the Celtics, the Bucks, the Lakers. I guess the Clippers would be like adding a strength to a strength, but I guess you could say the Clippers, the Nuggets, and the Nets, obviously. Because P.J. Tucker's skill set is what every championship team is looking for, and you cannot have enough of those guys. You can't have enough veterans. You can't have enough guys that can knock down a corner three and defend multiple positions and don't need the ball. Now, my problem is, why are the Rockets asking for a young player for P.J. Tucker when they just got a bunch of draft picks for James Harden and Victor Oladipo, which is possibly looking like either a midseason rental or a one-year rental?
I think P.J. Tucker, the team that could probably use him the most would be Brooklyn. But Brooklyn, yes, at this point has gutted all their assets in that James Harden trade, right? And yes, Brooklyn doesn't have any more young players to send out. Because you are right. The idea that they're asking for a good, promising young player for P.J. Tucker, who's 36 years old, is laughable. Like, that's nonsense. Mm-hmm. Like, you better take 2 second-round picks and $50,000 and be happy.
Correct. I think
Tucker is a very good rotation player. Like, he would help a team like Utah. He would be great in a place, yes, like Utah.
He would be their starting four.
Yeah, like, and even more so, like, he's, like you said, low usage with possibly high yield. He hasn't had very much high yield this year. Like, mm-hmm, he has not shot the ball well. Shooting 31% from the three-point line, not really that good. He's got to get closer to league average or above league average, I think, to make a trade, to give up a good young player and possibly a first-round pick. He'd have to start shooting like that to make a deal like that worth it. But I think even in a potential buyout, they could use him. A team like the Lakers could use him. But the problem is, I think, with a team like the Lakers getting him is you already got Wesley Matthews there, a wing that's not shooting the ball well. Do you need a second guy there who's a wing that's not shooting the ball particularly well? But like you said, right. I think he can definitely help a lot of teams. Philadelphia, he would be a use there. Boston could use him. Milwaukee
could use him, yes.
P.J. Tucker's a guy that should be, like, if he ends up getting traded to, let's say, a team, like, he gets offloaded to a team like Cleveland, he's definitely going to be a buyout candidate with a ton of suitors.
Absolutely. Because why would a rebuilding team take him? He's very good at his role, and his role is to help teams that are in contention, not to help a young team that's not going anywhere. Same thing with the guy, which we'll talk about a little bit later, like Trevor Ariza. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think a guy like Tucker, it's just odd because he hadn't played well this year in Houston, and sometimes you don't know if that's because he's mentally checked out because they're not very good, or if this is a sign of a decline. And because you're not really sure at a certain point, I would be a little reticent to give up, you know, a very good young player.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. John Collins.
I saw the Timberwolves were very interested in him, and I saw that the Celtics were also interested in him. John Collins is a difficult one because a guy, when you look at his numbers, he is 23 years old, almost at the end of his rookie deal, and he's averaging close to 17-9 a game and shooting 37% from three. That's not – it's a guy that makes you question why Atlanta would want to give up on him so early. And there's been, you know, reported beef between him and Trae Young, and they don't like how – he doesn't like how the offense is not running to him. And I think Boston – I think he would help Boston. I don't think he would fix all of Boston's problems. I think Minnesota would be interesting because I feel like at some point Minnesota is going to have to make a decision and trade for a veteran. Really, they're going to have to do the Jimmy Butler thing again. Because that's where they messed up in letting him go. Because, okay, you got a young core, and I don't want to, Cat is still young, but you got a young core of Cat, D'Lo, Anthony Edwards, and you've only won 9 games so far this year. So you're probably going to have a top 5, top 3 pick. How many of these picks are you going to accumulate before you package them and trade them for a star that can lead you to the playoffs? And so that's my problem. John Collins is an interesting one because he's so young. I don't know what the price tag that Atlanta wants back for him, but I do think a team like Boston, he could help. A team like Minnesota would be intriguing to watch. That's all I can think about right now.
I'll say this about the idea of John Collins to Minnesota. I think he would help them out the most, and they can use him the most because they need to start winning games. And they need to start winning games and winning games pretty quickly because, like, historically speaking, any high-level player on the caliber of a Karl Anthony Towns or an Anthony Davis, if they've been with a losing franchise for the first 7-8 years of their career, they're leaving after that after that first extension is up. And they got to figure this out and figure this out quick because the Timberwolves are horrid. They've been horrid. I've never seen a team that has more talent. Like, Karl Anthony Towns is one of the most talented big men I've seen in a long time. And yet he is one of the most disappointing players. And I mean disappointing in the terms of his teams don't win nothing. Like, Jimmy Butler was there for 9 months. He dragged them to the playoffs and said, I'm sick of this. And he bounced and cussed everybody out on his way out of the building. And they've been sorry since then.
Do you remember 3 years ago? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Are you good?
But do you remember 3 years ago, or it was 2 or 3 years ago when they did the NBA GM survey that they do every year? They had the player most voted by GMs to want to start their franchise with was Karl Anthony Towns. My, how the mighty have fallen. Continue.
I don't even think it's my how the mighty have fallen. It's just that, you know, you don't, because I'm struggling to understand why they can't do anything, why they are so incompetent.
Is
it the organization that's incompetent? Because after Garnett left, they've made the playoffs one time since then, and that was the year Jimmy Butler was there. And then they went back to the doldrums the moment Jimmy Butler's been gone. So is this the organization and the dysfunction of firing GMs, firing coaches? Is it that? Or is he missing something? Because I think he is missing something to the point where I hate to make this all about Carl Anthony Towns, but I think eventually he will end up being the most overqualified Robin in NBA history. Possibly either him or Anthony Davis. Is they about one? They about one and what?
When I say my how the mighty have fallen, you look at the projection of where his career was going. You're like, oh, this guy is the leader of your team. He can lead them to 45 wins, 50 wins, whatever. Like you said, when Jimmy Butler came, he kind of took a back seat. And I think that's where Jimmy got upset at those guys. Like, hey, you two, Towns and Wiggins, are more talented than me. Like, why are y'all not in here putting all this work in? I'm one of the best players, but I shouldn't be the best player. You guys should be taking over. And it was a frustration that came from that. And I think, Carl, it's kind of the same thing with Anthony Davis. I think Anthony Davis is a little better. I think he is better. But you look at the numbers, and you're like, why is this guy number one option? This guy just had 28 and 13, three blocks. But then you watch the game, and you're like, is this supposed to be a top 15 player? A top 10 player? Like, and then you look at him, you're like, he had 25 and 12. Like, it's not meaningful stats. You know what I mean? And it's like you're not really making an impact on the game. And I think that's the next level they have to get to, because he doesn't really play that much defense. And so I think for the Timberwolves to turn the corner, they're going to have to get another established star like Jimmy Butler that has an alpha male mentality that can take them to the playoffs. Or Carl is going to leave.
Moving on. Aaron Gordon.
I think he would really help a team like Portland. And I don't know what Portland would package together to make that trade happen. But I've said this for about 2 to 3 years now. Portland has already reached their ceiling with those two guards being their two best players. Two guards under 6'3" that do not play defense are not going to win your championship in today's league. It's just not going to happen. And so they need a wing slash big that can go for 2022. I don't think Aaron Gordon's that guy, but he'll make them better. I think Portland has peaked with this roster that they have. They've reached their ceiling. It was the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago. They played Golden State with no Kevin Durant and still got swept. That's as far as they're going to go in a Western Conference playoffs that did not have LeBron James, that they had to play. I can't remember who they played the first round, but they played Denver to get to a young Denver team to get to the conference finals. So that's their ceiling so far. They have to make a trade. I'm more of a proponent of trading CJ McCollum. I like him. He was on pace to be an all-star this year if he hadn't gotten hurt, but it's time to blow it up. So I think Aaron Gordon would help them. I would try not to give away CJ McCollum, but might have to happen.
I think Aaron Gordon's best fit is probably a place like Denver. They don't have the defensive versatility that they need to guard a LeBron, to guard a Kawhi, to guard
Paul George. Especially losing Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, especially losing Jeremy Grant to the Pistons. I mean, now, that don't look like the smartest thing for Jeremy Grant to do, but granted, he wanted a bigger role and wanted to be a bigger part of the offense. So, I feel him on that. But, I think, currently, they don't have anybody that can guard your LeBrons, your Kawhis, your Paul Georges. You know, granted that Paul George hasn't lost his mind throwing the ball off the side of the backboard again.
Right.
Michael Porter has a lot of length, but his consistency on defense isn't always there, right? I think they would, Denver would have to give up Will Barton and PJ Dozier to make that move, but I think that's a move they should be willing to make. I mean, I also want to say this. I think Denver is a team that has stars, I guess you can call them, but they don't have superstars. Like Jamal Murray is a low-end star. Nikola Jokic, mid-level star. Like, neither of those guys are, like, I think can push you over the top.
I agree.
So, I think that Aaron Gordon move, I don't think that move will push them over the top per se, but I think that gives them another long, lengthy guy to throw at your at Kawhi in those other wings.
I would agree with that, Alex. Barring Andre Drummond going to the Nets, I don't think there's any trade deadline slash buyout move that really just puts a team over the top. You know, they're the overall favorite. Can't beat them. There's no trade deadline buyout move.
Speaking of trade deadline buyout moves, what did you think about Blake Griffin to the Nets?
This is either going to go one or two ways. One, he's going to have he's going to catch an alley-oop his first game and look amazing. And it's going to be an underrated signing, kind of like the Clippers signing Nick Batum this offseason. Or two, it's going to be like almost every other buyout move where a guy gets bought out, a team gets really excited that they just got a buyout guy and he doesn't pan out and he looks like a player that should have been bought out. Because these are the facts. So most buyout guys are bought out for a reason, you know? And like, unless he just got some resurgence, which he might, he's averaging 11 points and hasn't dunked a basketball in 2 years. Now, he does bring different qualities. They're not going to ask him to score 20. He's a really good passer. He's another body down low. But, I mean, other than that, I'm not sure what else he's going to bring to them.
So my whole thing with Brooklyn has been this entire time is I don't love the Blake Griffin move, to be fair. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
It could help because, you know, they need frontline help. They're too small, mm-hmm. and DeAndre Jordan's too old to try to do this all alone. And they gave up giving up Jared Allen hurt, giving up Torian Prince hurt in the James Harden deal. I think Griffin helps. I don't think he's a role player at this point. If this was Blake Griffin of 2012, 2013, we're talking about something different. But this is Blake Griffin in the year of our Lord 2021.
Hey, let's thank our lucky stars that Nets team isn't from 2014 with a prime athletic DeAndre Jordan, prime athletic Blake Griffin, Jeff Green, Kevin Durant, obviously. But that would be insane.
On to our last three candidates, George Hill.
You know, it's been a lot of links to the Lakers. I would say the Clippers are probably his best fit. They need a veteran playmaker. George Hill is not going to be super extravagant and flashy, but he's just going to get the job done. And I think it's kind of proven now that in order for Kawhi is still great, obviously, but in order for him to be at his peak level, he needs a solid playmaker, whether it be, you know, a Tony Parker or Kyle Lowry or, even the Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet. But, you know, asking Kawhi to bring the ball up, initiate the offense, score 25, everybody's not suited to do that. And Kawhi, at his core, is from San Antonio, where he was a great cog in an offense. You're not asking Kawhi to be the entire offense, which, I mean, it's still proven it's going to win you 45 games, but it's a peak to it, right? Like, everybody's not LeBron. Everybody's not going to be able to handle the ball 24 seconds of each shot clock and make the right decision at the end. He's a great player when he has another point guard around him. He's got other supporting role players, and he can just go get his 25. And like 5-3. And so I think George Hill would do that. He's capable of knocking down shots, so it makes him even harder to defend. And, you know, he can go to the Clippers because I still remember what he did to the Cavaliers in 2018 with those free throws. So I didn't have to say that, but go ahead.
I was going to say, I will agree with you there. I think the Clippers would be the best place for George Hill. And last year, I think, would really hurt the Clippers in addition to their issues with, like, team chemistry that they didn't really play very much together. The fact that it seemed like in the bubble that they just wanted to go home. Like, it didn't seem like their biggest reward was not winning a championship. They were like, no, get me the hell out of here. I think that's what really happened with them at the end. Like, why they just collapsed. They were like, we're ready to go home. But I think the point guard thing, like you mentioned, this year they weren't really able to shore that up in free agency. They whiffed on Rajon Rondo. They whiffed on Avery Bradley. George Hill would help because Bobby Shmurda, aka Reggie Jackson, I think Kawhi is going to kill him because they got clips at this point on Twitter of Reggie Jackson just dribbling the ball into oblivion with Kawhi Leonard calling for the ball with a smaller man on him.
Yes,
I think he might kill Reggie Jackson by the end of this. He really might. So I think George Hill would help them out. Moving on. This might be, you mentioned him earlier, this guy might be a half-season rental or one-year rental, Victor Oladipo.
The best fit for him would be, he's probably not going to go there, but I would say the Lakers. He gives the Lakers a perimeter scoring option that can guard on the other side of the ball. He doesn't have to shoulder as much of the scoring load. He's just a cog in the offense next to LeBron and AD. And I think being in L.A., he could expand his off-the-court ventures. He's a singer. But he's just – I guess he's very intrigued by going to Miami because that's where he keeps being linked even after he was traded. It was like, well, he might just stay here 1 year because he still wants to go to Miami. I don't really know how I see that working, especially if they sign in free agency. They already have so many guards now with Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Goran Dragic, Avery Bradley now. So in the offseason, you're going to sign Victor Oladipo? It'd be interesting if they trade for him, but if I'm Miami and you're being linked to me, why would I give up assets when I can just get you in the summer? And I don't really know how a fit of Victor, Jimmy, and Bam is going to be sold. It's a tough group. They're gritty. What is their peak, though? Especially with a James Harden in Brooklyn now and Philadelphia actually having some spacing on the floor. You know, like, what would their ceiling be? Fourth seed, second round?
Probably somewhere around there, I think. Now, the team I've heard Oladipo linked to was the Golden State Warriors. And to be real with you, I don't know how much better that makes them. And I don't know how much sense it makes for Golden State, at least even in the long term, right? So, like, one, what would you give up? What would you send back to Houston?
Exactly.
Are you sending back Kelly Oubre? Are you sending back, Pascal? Like, what bodies are you sending back for Victor Oladipo? Mm-hmm. And second, do you plan on keeping Victor Oladipo longer than this season? Because they plan on having Klay Thompson back, right?
Exactly.
So, and Oladipo is probably going to be looking for a max contract. You can't have Steph, Draymond, Klay, and this isn't going to work, at least not in the long term. Now, if the Warriors are just hell-bent on making the playoffs this year, okay, the move makes sense. But if they're thinking long, they're playing a long game, I don't think that's a move they should make. And our last two, we can just do them together because they're from the same team.
Okay.
LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan.
See, LaMarcus is trade value's gone down so much, and I hate to see that for guys that were once really good and would have demanded such a high market. But now it's, okay, you're big, that can score. You can't really move your feet that well, and you're a little bit past your prime. You're kind of an older Montrezl Harrell. Now, obviously, at his peak, much better than Montrez was. But, I mean, now it's like, okay, if Montrez just got the mid-level exception from a team and he's probably in his prime because he cannot move, he does not shoot the three great, and he cannot protect the rim, what do you think an old man would get?
I hear what you said, but like Aldridge averaged like 19-8 last year. Like, he was pretty good.
True.
Pretty good that wasn't on a Spurs team that was sort of in transition, and the Spurs team is still in transition. Oddly enough, San Antonio, 6 seed. We back. But I was going to say, LaMarcus, I think he would be able to help the Lakers, legitimately. Like, this Marc Gasol thing hasn't really worked out, especially with Gasol on the offensive end, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
given that you're not sure really what's going on with Anthony Davis, right?
Right.
LaMarcus Aldridge is perfect to come off your bench and score points. Low usage, high yield. Play him 17, 18 minutes a game. He can probably give you 12, 13 points because all his lone responsibility is to score. That's it.
And so while I could see that happening, it's almost too close to being like Channing Frye when he was with LeBron. And now Channing Frye looked really good with LeBron, okay? Because he was a big, like, shoot it, step out, whatever. LeBron created open shots for him. But my thing is, okay, can he play in meaningful games? Channing Frye was great in the Eastern Conference playoffs. He was great against Atlanta. He was great against Toronto. Is he going to be able to play against Brooklyn? You know what I mean? Like, is he? And so my thing with the Lakers, I just feel like they, like, the, I feel like the Marc Gasol saying that it's failed is a little bit overstated, because his numbers do not look good. And, you know, sometimes he can look a little, like, obviously past his prime, but we still have the number one defense in the league. Like, and he's a starter, and this is the number one defense missing two or three guys at a time. His IQ can't be stated enough. He's not, obviously he's not as athletic as he used to be, if that was at all. But I just feel like losing both of JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard and not bringing another big that is just an athletic rim protector, like a Nerlens Noel, Whiteside, you know, JaVale McGee, having one of those guys, that's really what's hurting the Lakers right now, because they're getting, it's a lot of attempts at the rim because teams aren't afraid to drive in there. Montrez is nice, but he's nice next to a guy like Anthony Davis. Like, you can't ask him to play your center role and be like, oh, Trez, protect the rim. You can't do that. He's an energy guy that plays hard, shoots mid-range, and he's best suited next to a guy that can protect the rim and shoot the three, Anthony Davis. And so I've seen LaMarcus be linked to Boston and Miami. Like I said, with the John Collins thing, he might help Boston, but he doesn't truly fix all of their issues. And I don't see it working in Miami at all. But one more, because we talked about it kind of off air, and I just got a notification. Trevor Ariza is linked to the Heat. The Heat are thinking about sending the second round pick in exchange for Trevor Ariza. So now they realize how much they miss Jay Crowder. Now they're trying to get another Jay Crowder to add to that to rekindle watch you.
Yeah, I mean, Ariza doesn't really make them much better. Like, he helps the whole grit thing. Mm-hmm. Loose balls, hard screens, energy, experience, veteran leadership. He helps with that. But, like, in terms of, like, can Ariza be on the floor in the last 3-4 minutes of a ball game during winning time at 36 years old? I don't know. Maybe.
It's kind of the same. It's kind of the PJ Tucker thing. It's kind of ironic that they were on the same team 2 years ago, which is a big reason why the Rockets won 60-something games. Both of these guys are very essential to teams winning championships. You need guys like that, veterans. You know, can shoot the three, can defend multiple wings. Trevor Ariza, I don't know how much left he still has in the tank, but he used to be one of the better wing defenders in the league. I would say a top 10 guy. And so I don't know why a team, like, because I saw the Lakers were linked to him. I don't know why a team hasn't tried to, if that's what it takes, sending the second round pick, I don't know why a team hasn't tried to do that earlier.
Absolutely. But we are out of time here on the program, so we're going to have to get up out of here. Kenny Miller, my man, I appreciate you for hanging out with me once again.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
Every time, every time. So let the folks know where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. Again, that's _Kennedy, as in the former president, John F., and the former wrestler, Mr. Kennedy, _KennedyMiller_.
All right, all right. You can find me on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. Again, that's on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. Follow the show on Twitter, GamePlanTSM. That's T as in Texas, S as in South Dakota, M as in Maine. For Kennedy Miller, My name is Alex Goodwin. This has been the Game Plan Podcast. We'll see you guys next time.